we thought there was a need for a tool that was a superior sort of content authenticity, content QA QC tool. Plagiarism tools, that especially the dominant plagiarism tools for online marketing, kind of Copyscape sucks. We wanted to build an improved version of that. Hadn't really changed in 20 years. That was kind of what we were initially building. Taking the whole editorial process and putting it into a tool is something that is lacking. It's a pretty fragmented process. Writing experience, you have tools like Grammarly that are great. The editing process, there wasn't really a unified tool to complete that whole process. And that was what we were slowly building. Added in the first features that we had was AI detection and an improved plagiarism checking feature.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the AI Marketing Navigator. This is your daily compass in the ever-evolving world of AI marketing. Okay, Navigators, I'm super excited to welcome John Gilham, the founder of Originality.ai. John has a fascinating background. He founded and sold a content marketing agency before launching Originality.ai in November of 2022, just before ChatGPT took the world by storm. What makes John's perspective particularly unique is that he was one of the earliest adopters of generative AI for SEO at scale, and he saw this wave coming before many of us others did. So today we're going to explore the evolution of AI-generated content, content detection, and the future of authenticity in digital marketing. John, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. Thanks for having me. Always excited to geek out on this topic.
Absolutely. Me too. Before we get into Originality.ai, maybe you could just give us a little bit of background on your career in digital, your career. I know you had a career on the agency side of things. What brought you to AI? What brought you to Originality.ai?
Yeah, no, sounds good. Yeah, kind of the short version is a mechanical engineer by sort of education, and then had always been sort of building up at the time it was like a side hustle, and then got more serious about it, of building up a portfolio of content websites. That has evolved over the years into sort of different online businesses. All those online businesses had the same theme of producing content that would perform well on Google and then monetizing the traffic that we got. That grew into an agency where we were doing that for clients. We had a content marketing agency, sold it, had been using generative AI transparently, where we had a product that we said we were using generative AI and just doing it for, you know, at scale at a price that worked for everybody. But it was sort of clearly declaring that this was AI generated content. Mm-hmm. And then we had the other product that was human written content. And we were getting the question of kind of, how do you know the difference between the two? And that was sort of what was the genesis of Originality.
Sure. Makes sense. I love the fact that you are highlighting the transparency that you used in that one service offering that had the Gen AI content. Can I ask you, what tool were you using at that time for that generated AI content?
So at one point we were the heaviest users of Jasper when they were sort of the popular, sort of the main go-to tool. We were at one point, yeah, the heaviest users, and worked with them to do some sort of agency training for their audience and customers.
Amazing. Awesome. Yeah, I'm familiar with Jasper as well. Okay, let's dive into Originality AI. So you launched Originality AI before ChatGPT was released. What signals made you kind of confident or made you see the need for AI content detection on the horizon?
Yeah, so certainly we did not think it was, you know, in hindsight, it looks pretty clever. At the time, it did not seem as obvious as it seems now. We thought there was a need for a tool that was a superior sort of content authenticity, content QA QC tool. Plagiarism tools, especially the dominant plagiarism tools for online marketing, kind of Copyscape sucks. We wanted to build an improved version of that. Hadn't really changed in 20 years. That was kind of what we were initially building. Taking the whole editorial process and putting it into a tool is something that is lacking. It's a pretty fragmented process. Writing experience, you have tools like Grammarly that are great. The editing process, there wasn't really a unified tool to complete that whole process. And that was what we were slowly building. Added in the first features that we had was AI detection and an improved plagiarism checking feature. And we kind of, some of the, what we saw coming was the question around, did your writers use AI or not? And it's like, well, we have a policy, we trust our writers, but is that enough? And you know, certainly for many writers where this is a job, they care about writing, but ultimately it's like they're doing this to put food on the table. There's such an incentive if they can 10x their productivity. Hard to believe that some wouldn't, and kind of, you know, impossible to believe that some wouldn't. And exactly. So that's what we saw coming, and controls and policies weren't enough without some kind of enforcement and detection capability.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I find it interesting that the use case that you mentioned that I didn't really think of right away was from the business owners or the manager's perspective, hiring writers or whether they have writers who work for them. I find that interesting because the use case for me was always like, oh, I'm reading content as a consumer, as a surfer of the internet, or just a general user. And I don't know what's AI or what's AI generated. What do you see more value in the tool being used by managers, marketing managers, to kind of manage compliance internally? Or do you see there more value for users on the end of the search engine or the user experience? Or do you see kind of both, and how do those compare?
So we see both, and we see academia use as well. The people we are building for is the sort of anybody acting as an editor. And so whether it's somebody that could be a business owner, if you have one writer working for you, the you know, there can be a great use case for generative AI within sort of the marketing content creation process, but there's a risk to it. And we believe that the ultimate sort of owner of that risk is the business owner, and they should be the ones that make the decision on whether or not to accept the risk of publishing AI generated content on their site. There's a massive Google risk to doing that at scale. There's reputation risk if you leave sort of the use of generative AI unchecked, and we don't think that should be sort of the decision of the writer, but the decision of the editor or business owner.
Absolutely, that makes so much sense. That's great. I want to ask you, we've only been in this AI generated content for a couple years now, but it feels like forever almost in some ways, and other ways it feels like only a day. But how has the landscape of AI content detection changed since you first launched originality.ai? Is it incredibly more competitive now? What does it look like today?
Yeah. So when we first launched, and then ChatGPT launched, I'm like, oh crap, like we just trained our model on something and now it's not going to work. It's like, oh no, simplifying it, but it's a wrapper. It's OpenAI's own wrapper on GPT-3. And it's like, okay, we can still detect it. And then sort of all this talk about this massive scale that is coming around GPT-4, it's going to be so different. GPT-3.5 came, like, oh, we're still okay. And then 4 came and like, oh, we didn't drop off as much as we dropped off with 3.5. And so we can close that gap. And like, what about when new models come out? Are we going to still be able to detect them? And so we always sort of, especially for like the first 6 months, year, we were like kind of thinking we were in this potential infant mortality stage where a model is going to come out and just be totally undetectable. What we have seen, and then this sort of will connect back to the question around like, what have we seen in the marketplace of AI detectors? What we saw was this, we've seen this sort of plateauing around the sort of writing capabilities of these models. They're all using the same data set. They're all using the same hardware. They're all using the same sort of foundational technology around training. And so the output of them is all pretty similar and pretty detectable. And so new models don't result in massive drops in the detection efficacy. What we have seen, and so that's sort of like what we've seen on detectors' capabilities. What we've seen on the marketplace around AI detectors is an explosion of them. We were, I think, the third sort of like thing that existed on the internet that was capable of doing this. And now there's hundreds of open source solutions. There's a wide range in their capabilities, and there's a very significant lack of transparency around reporting of efficacy. And so we've seen it sort of like get narrowed down into now kind of a few reputable companies that are out reporting efficacy, attempting to sort of like push the narrative that AI detectors are BS. away with like, no, AI detectors work, but you just need to define what work is. They're, you know, not perfect, highly accurate, great use cases for them, but not, but will make mistakes at a rate of, you know, 1%.
Sure, sure. I want to transition right into, you were mentioning, you know, kind of the patterns that the AI generative AI tools use in creating content. Can you walk us through a little bit the mechanics of how originality.ai differentiates between that human written content and that AI generated content? How does it find those patterns, or what is it about the AI generated content that flags or pops up for originality?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, and it's kind of one of the ones that where we have a bit of an unsettling answer. Where the honest answer is we don't know. Kind of similar to how, like, if you were to ask an AI or like an AI engineer at Google about like, hey, why did this Google result show up ahead of this Google result? They'd be like, yeah, here's some sort of they'd have a more PR polished answer than we don't know. But if you kind of like pull on that thread a little bit, the honest answer is they don't know either. When you're working with these sort of black box AI mm-hmm. models, you can understand the inputs, you can understand your sort of validation test and your efficacy test, but like specifically what was the reason why it got identified as AI versus not AI, what was the reason why the sort of the weather AI predicted it was going to rain, these are sort of black box models mm-hmm. that you can understand the efficacy of on a large enough scale, but on any sort of like individual sort of classification, you can't point to like these were the five reasons that identified it as AI or human, which is unsettling from our end as the creator. And we know a very unsatisfactory answer from somebody that is wanting to know with certainty AI or not.
Sure. I think you mentioned black box systems, and I think so much of this AI, of these AI tools, and especially these large language models that we see, to the layman or to the general user, they're purely a black box. I mean, it's really incredible, how much we're already trusting and using these systems, with really knowing very little about what's going on behind them. And you mentioned PageRank, the Google algorithm, and how Google engineers would be like, oh yeah, well, it's, you know, even they will have a hard time nailing down exactly why PageRank did something. I want to transition one more time before we cut today's episode for time. Can you tell me a little bit about, we talk on this show a lot about like industry standardized frameworks for detecting AI. And we've talked about Google's SynthID. Have you heard of SynthID, the Google framework for tagging? So they have a model that they use to tag any images or videos that are generated through their tools. Do you see the need for the actual companies themselves, OpenAI, Anthropic? Do they need to set up some sort of standard for whether it's, you know, AI visible watermarking or something like that? Do you believe that that's essential, or should the market like originality.ai be responsible for that?
Yeah, I don't think you can put it on detectors. I think society is going to wrestle with this on where we want AI and not don't want AI. And there's going to be more societally harmful places for fake synthetic media to show up and cause societal harm. I think images, video, audio can produce a lot more sort of like visceral reaction from people than written words. And so I think there's going to be a larger push around sort of regulatory and companies trying to make sure that there's watermarking or declaration around when AI is used on those forms of media. I think politicians are probably also more afraid of their deep fake video. And so it might be in their own self-interest to pass legislation related to that. I think text can obviously, it has a massive impact in the world, but I think any individual text is the sort of extent of harm that it can cause is more contained than other forms of media.
For sure.
We see harmful AI generated content causing real harm in the world. There's examples that we helped some journalists with books being published on Amazon that were talking about sampling mushrooms to detect if they were safe or not to eat by tasting them, obviously leading to potential death. So
yeah.
And so I think that's the landscape of should it or shouldn't it be? And then I think there's the other sort of side of this is like, could it or couldn't it be? And the reality is that I don't know enough about sort of audio and image and video to answer that with any intelligence. But I can say that any watermarking approach for text would be incredibly easy to be removed with another LLM. It would be sort of an instantaneous, simple thing. Those would pop up instantaneously. Any sort of effort around watermarking would have to be universally applied. Exactly. When there's open source models that are out there, it wouldn't work. And so there's sort of the question of like, should we, shouldn't we, and could we or couldn't we? And I think the question of should we, shouldn't we is uncertain around text. Could we? And the answer is no.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's a good point. If you took something that was watermarked, you could just take it into a different LLM and say, hey, please rewrite this for me. And it's going to generate something without that same watermark. Excellent. Okay, I think I'm going to cut off there for today, John. We're going to keep this nice and short for you listeners, for the navigators out there. John, if it's all right with you, we'll have you back tomorrow in tomorrow's episode. And we'll talk a little bit about SEO in particular and how AI-generated content is going to look with the SEO practitioners out there. Is that all right?
Sounds great.
Awesome. Thanks, John. We'll be right back.